Hi, everybody. My name is Chris. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, yeah, Chris.
Oh, thanks for coming out. Tonight we're going to be going over steps 10, 11. Vinny's going to be covering that. In the next 5 weeks, we're going to be covering basically the heart of this particular presentation, and what that'll be is that'll be the 12th step. Next week, Cass is going to cover literature-based sponsorship. The week after, Mary Beth is going to be talking about first-year sponsorship, some of the things that you can expect to have happen during that. The week after, Mike P. from Chester is going to be talking about the third legacy service, different kinds of service commitments you can get as far as prison commitments and jail, treatment facilities work, things like that. That's going to be interesting. September 24th, we're looking at a celebration and speaker meeting, and I hear that there's going to be an awesome speaker there that week, so I wouldn't want to miss that. And we'll be finishing up October 1st. I'm going to be covering wet drunk work. So try to make it the next month or so, because that really is what this whole particular presentation is about. The perspective that we're going for here was how best to work with your sponsee or your prospect or whatever you want to call that individual. What happens is every once in a while somebody's gonna come up and say, "Hey, would you sponsor me?" And I hate to say this, but in North Jersey, I could easily say that most sponsors are worthless in North Jersey. Because they're not really well equipped to take you through the steps. What they're well equipped to do is what their sponsor did with them, which is basically give basically oral tradition wisdom snippets. You know, like, well, you should just keep it simple and take the cotton out of your ears and stick it in your mouth, and that's how you should deal with that situation. And some people, myself included, don't really respond well to that type of direction. We need maybe a little bit something more, you know. And what this particular workshop is about is showing that there is more to sponsorship than just saying, "Give me a call when you have problems." I think it's incumbent upon us to be able to present a program of recovery to someone if they ask us to sponsor them. That's really what our job is as a sponsor. And there's a couple of really great sayings that Bill Wilson penned. One of them is our responsibility as a sponsor is to provide an adequate presentation of the program of recovery. In other words, to be able to show the person, hopefully we've been through the steps, hopefully we have had a spiritual awakening, so that we can show someone else how we did it, and that's probably the most valuable thing that you can offer a newcomer. I'm not saying it's not good to just drive people to meetings, to encourage them to not drink. There's nothing wrong with encouraging someone to not drink. But the difference between encouraging somebody to not drink and offering them a program of recovery that will grant them freedom from alcoholism is like the difference between night and day. I'll say this again, it's sometimes the difference between life and death, depending on how severe your alcoholism is. So we've been covering a lot of the mechanics of the steps. It's been from the perspective of, you know, how basically do I present the material to someone that's over at my house going through the book or however you work with people. And we've now moved up to steps 10 and 11. Steps 4 through 9 create a spiritual experience. If you're painstaking about that work that they lay out in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, you are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. You are going to comprehend the word serenity. The ninth step promises are going to manifest for you because you've worked for them. Now, one of the things that you learn in Alcoholics Anonymous is you can't rest on your laurels. You can't rest on yesterday's accomplishments. Your spiritual condition, if it's not maintained and you don't attempt to broaden and deepen it, what is going to happen is it's slowly going to deteriorate. And again, depending upon your level of lack of control over your drinking, you're going to get to a point where if you don't drink again, you're going to be one miserable son of a bitch to be around. So so the thought brings us to steps 10 and 11. How do we maintain a spiritual condition once we've worked for one through the first nine steps? And I think Vinny will be able to answer that because I think he understands this process and it's part of his experience. And he works with a gazillion guys. Guys, the rest of us probably wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole. But, you know, he's that kind of a guy. Anyway, here you go, Vinny.
Well, thanks, Chris. And good evening, everybody. My name is Vinny. I'm an alcoholic. And I wanted to thank this group for asking me to present this material tonight. I feel privileged. I know that, you know, working a 12th step, I'm trying to carry this message to the alcoholic, but I don't necessarily consider this part of that, but I'm really happy that we have a presentation here that is focusing on how do we carry this message to the alcoholic who's still suffering. How do we take him through the steps? And that's something that, as Chris mentioned, I do deal with on a daily basis. I had recently a guy with more sobriety than I had asked me to work with him through the steps because he had specific problems going on in his life. He fired me after the fifth step, but that's cool. That's okay. Another guy who was my first sponsee when I was much like Chris described, that sponsor that really, when he asked me to sponsor him, I was about a year sober. I had not done the work out of this book. I vaguely recall reading something about it in the book, but I never really did it. And therefore, when he asked me to sponsor him, I was reticent, but I said yes. And then I took him to meetings and listened to him whine. And finally, he joined another home group, got another sponsor, and the last month he came to me after, I guess, about 7 years of continuous dryness and asked me to take him through the steps, through the book, in the book. And because he knows that's what I do today. So at any rate, what I'm going to try to do is convey how I approach the newcomer who is in amends and how I present this concept of daily inventory and prayer and meditation to him. I will read through the book and I'll reference this, the 12 and 12 as I go. And I just like to go through, Chris kind of did go through for me the promises in step 9. I think they're prescient to what I'm going to discuss tonight. It says, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going into a new freedom and a new happiness. We'll not forget the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. Yes, that's right, newcomer. Your experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness that you used to have and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. And I think it's really important because here I am working with a guy and he's going through amends. And he's making amends to people who may very well not believe that he's a changed person. And he's going to have to show them by amending his behavior that he's embarked on a new way of living and a new life. And God, and he doesn't have to stress this, as Pete mentioned last week, and I, you know, just to be sitting here and associated with people like the people who had presented before me is really, truly, is just gratifying for me, and it's an honor. And I hope I do a decent job of presenting it. But at any rate, this person is out there making amends. So he's making amends, and it says right after that that they're not extravagant promises, and they're being fulfilled among us recently sober drunks. And the promises are being fulfilled sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, but they will always materialize if we work for them. Well, I thought I was done with the work, he says to me. You know, 4 and 4 was pretty tough, you know. And this amends process, you know, it's scary, but it's working out. It says this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of life, as we've cleaned up the past. So what does that mean? One sponsor told me that we do it in a 4-step. I do not recommend that to the people I work with. And what I recommend to the people I work with is to sit quietly in the morning, relax, and just say a little prayer, ask for guidance, ask to be kept safe and protected as you write inventory, and that's about it. You know, and I don't let them, I don't like to let my sponsees take 3 months to do a 4-step, you know. So I get them through it, you know, because their life depends on it, you know. And if they don't want to work with me, I 96 them. It's simple. So it says we vigorously commence this way, like as we cleaned up the past. I believe we vigorously commence 10 and 11 as we're doing step 9. Because number one, we have to mend our behavior. And these are the day in, day out steps. These are the steps. It says, one day at a time, one of our slogans. Well, what that comes from is every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. See, we've realized, and I'm speaking, you know, off the top of my head, but what I'm saying is to my sponsee, look, you know, God is doing for you what you could not do for yourself. Remember how you sat down and wrote inventory. You faced the things that were wrong with you. Now you're making amends to people you never thought you could face again. You're actually accomplishing these things. Who the hell do you think is doing this for you? You had no power to do that, just like it says in the book. We had no more power to do this than the man in the moon. So you're cleaning up the past. You've got to amend your behavior, and that's what step 10 is all about. Okay, and I like the 12 and 12 has some great points, and I'll touch on them. But what's, you know, sufficient really for a guy who's just getting through this work is what's written right here in the book. I've got handouts here, and I'll hand them out when I get to this stuff. But for me, if you look at these instructions, I mean, they're clear-cut directions, okay? We've entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. That is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. Okay, in your day, when you're out there shucking and jiving, doing whatever you do, and you start to get a little upset, we look at ourselves. We try to make this a practice. It does not come easy. We ask God at once to remove things that upset us. We make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone, like you're doing right now, right? Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help, right? And then it tells us what our code is, love and tolerance of others. So if I have love and tolerance of others, impatience, intolerance are not part of my life anymore. I'm amending my behavior. I'm living up to the amends that I'm making. God has entered into my life, which is in a way which is indeed miraculous. And you know, you got to trust God. You got to trust the process. And that's what this is all about. This is what I tell people. Because, you know, it's not an easy deal. We're out there living our life. We have these old behaviors that we came to rely upon. And like Carl Jung said to Roland Hazard when he's like, you know, please, is there no exception? He goes, well, yeah, once in a while, some guys have these spiritual experience and ideas, emotions, and motives that were once the guiding force of these men's lives are cast to one side and an entirely new set come and dominate them. So that's what we're doing here. That's what this is the culmination of this process. We have beautiful promises in step 9, if we work for them. How do we work for them? We work it on a daily basis with 10 and 11. Okay. So we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Okay, now that's a big tall order for me. I got to call somebody and say, listen, you know, I just had this thing. As a matter of fact, I was on the phone with somebody today. I was wrapped up in self-pity. My boss had kind of made me feel like a jerk in front of my fellow employees. And I was wrapped up in self-pity until I realized I'd walked around the plant once. I said a prayer. I looked at the sky. Realized what a beautiful day it was, and I'm glad to be alive. My clients were still coming in. I still had a chance to get a major, huge account, and I started to become grateful. And I went up and explained to him that I was wrapped up in self-pity, you know, but hey, they're still coming, man. We've still got a real good shot with these people. And he smiled and laughed, and, you know, it was nothing to him. Of course, it was everything to me. So I have to practice love and tolerance of others. And then, of course, we have the 10-step promises. And, you know, I love to show these to the guys that I'm working with. I mean, this is the culmination of the work as well. Not only are we trying to get a new attitude and a new outlook in life, a new relationship with our Creator, as it says in the beginning of the Into Action chapter here. It says, we've been trying to get a new attitude. Okay, that's what happens when we work step 10 properly. When we start to work with patience, love, tolerance, unselfishness, you know, kindness, and a new relationship with our Creator. So as we do this work, these things are coming to fruition. These things are becoming real for us. And they're becoming real for the new guy. So it's really, I mean, once the guy starts making amends and he starts getting on fire, you say, do you want to go back to your old way of life? Do you want to keep relying on this stuff that you used to do to shuck and jive your way through life? Or do you want to feel the Spirit growing in you? And most of the time, they want to keep feeling that Spirit growing in them. They want to keep going on this deal. So we read the promises together. Because this is really, to me, when I'm with a guy, you know, he's doing amends, this is the most important part of the work for me. This is when you, like, set the guy loose. This is when he's able to start working with others, to start bringing this message. Because he's had an experience. He's had a spiritual experience. So he's got to live the thing. He's got to walk the walk. He can't just talk the talk. He's got to walk the walk. And he's got to work with others. So we have the promises. We have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. Okay, that's another behavior modification deal that's happening since we're doing the 10th step. Sanely and normally. We find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are not cocky, nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. So God is definitely doing for me what I could not do for myself. In its purest sense, I don't have an obsession to drink alcohol anymore. But the idea of being placed in a position of neutrality, when somebody's up my butt at work and I turn and can smile at them, where I can go to a different mode than I used to go, which is not self-centered or self-pitying or whatever it is, and I feel that something else in me, that quiet confidence in me, it's a lot different than when I stopped drinking. That's a lot different than when I was drinking. And if I don't do this, it all comes back pretty quick. So I got to keep on this plane. That's how I react so long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. And that's a warning. So I say to the guy, this is a warning. It says in step 10, and I refer to this because I'm assuming that people here are interested in working with newcomers, have had a spiritual experience. And what this book says in the foreword to the 12 and 12, that these essays are meant to broaden and deepen our understanding of the program of action that's laid out in the big book. I never tell a newcomer to read this thing. Stay away from it. Get a spiritual experience and then broaden and deepen your understanding. But there's some really good stuff in it for people who are trying to explain what the heck the 10th step is all about. Okay, as we work the first 9 steps, we prepare ourselves for the adventure of a new life. So my new life is an adventure. My new life without alcohol, without the numbing effects of alcohol in my life and trying to run away from everything and losing lots of things and relationships and just making wreckage out of my life. I'm doing it without it. I'm doing a life, and I'm making it happen with God's help and the help of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is an adventure. I was at Carey Clinic last night. There were at least 15 recovered alcoholics and a couple of recovered addicts in there working with newcomers. I mean, that just lifted me up. And I said to the guy, you know, 10 years ago, if you had told me I was going to be sitting with you here doing this, I would have laughed in your face. This is not what I considered any kind of rewarding experience. For me, it was wonderful. So it is an adventure. And it says that, can we stay sober, keep an emotional balance, and live to good purpose under all conditions? One of the objectives of the 10th step. It says there are necessities. So I went from willingness to do this stuff, willingness to embark on a way of life that is an answer to all my problems, to the point where I need it. Now, I was willing to do it when I came in here. I was willing to take your suggestions because I was down and out and had no choice. Now it's a necessity, and that's kind of strange to me. You go from, well, I'm willing, to I need this stuff. I need it like breath. I need it like a light. I need it like sunlight, and I need it like the air that I breathe, the water that I drink, the food that I eat. I need it more than that. I need it to stay centered, stay with a God of my understanding, and stay with you people and keep progressing in this life. It explains the different types of inventories, which puts to bed, for me, a debate. In the beginning of the 10th step, it says, continue to take personal inventories. That's another thing I don't really dwell on with newcomers, that, you know, it's not a bad idea to do a 4-step, you know, every year, every 6 months for some of us crazies, you know, whatever. It says we have three times of inventories. There's the spot check inventory, taken any time of the day, which refers to right here. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God who wants to remove them. Then there's the one we take at night, which is explained in the 11th step in the big book. Okay? And there's the one where we get with our spiritual advisor or our sponsor and make a careful review of our progress since the last time. So that's where, that, to me, continue to take personal inventory is just what, you know, just exactly what it says. We just keep it going and keep growing. Okay? It says here, our first objective will be the development of self-restraint. That's a big one for me. And basically what it says is that I grow spiritually by looking at myself and amending my behavior. And so when you look at step nine, the true nature of my intent is to become a new person with the guidance of God and my fellows by taking inventory in step 10. So to do step 9 effectively, sure, I make the approach. Yeah, I talk to the people. I get lifted up. Incredible things happen to me when I make amends. I shared at 6 o'clock about meeting a man who, by chance, at the shrine of St. Joseph, I was going to make a 5th step. And it says in the 10th step and in the 12 and 12, when we make an attempt to go closer to God, things happen which are almost unexplainable to us. God puts things in our life. I turned and this guy was standing there, and he's a man that I was trying to get in touch with for 3 years to make amends. We sat down and I made amends to this cat for 10 minutes. We got up and he gave Ron and I all kinds of information about the shrine, because he was the guy that put it together. The shrine, excuse me, not the shrine, but the memorial to September 11th is unbelievable. What an experience. And I got that because I made a step towards God. You know, God does not make too hard terms for those who seek him. You know, and the more we seek, the more we get. And that's where we're going into step 11 here. We're going to go into step 11, and I like to point out that I met a lot of people in my quest for spiritual understanding and growth in my effectiveness and my understanding. And I would not leave any stone unturned when it comes to learning about meditation and prayer. There's so many books. There's so many practices. I mean, from the guys that stand out in front of the plaza that I always see with the orange robes and, you know, those guys to guys like Joe Hawk, who came was it West Orange we went to? And he shared on 10 and 11 to just meditative stuff that's out there. In every religion, it's a tradition that has been enjoyed for centuries by people who are trying to grow towards God. And this is where I can make use of what religious people or just meditative people have used for centuries. And it's really, to me, it's indispensable. I want more of this stuff. It says in the 11th step that, now and then we may be granted a glimpse of that ultimate reality, which is God's kingdom. They're talking about doing meditation here. They're talking about, now, a newcomer, a guy who's just been through amends and is just trying to do his best job at the 10th step, is going to say, you know, a glimpse of God's kingdom. Well, that's my experience. I can say to him, yes, I have felt the presence of God in meditation. I felt the presence of God in spiritual work with another alcoholic. I felt the presence of God on the phone hearing somebody tell me about his amends, his most recent amends. So I felt that. I've experienced that. And you may look askance at it, but, you know, to me, it's promised in this book, throughout this work, from the very, very beginning of the book, where they're talking about what's happened when we pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. What happens with us? What happens with our relationship with God? When we can say, when these worldly men and women, worldly, and I don't know anybody in this room that probably couldn't be classified as worldly, you know, We've been worldly. Now we are otherworldly. Now we are in the fellowship of the Spirit, and we're going to read that in a second. And can flatly declare that the consciousness of the presence of God, the consciousness of the presence of God, is the most important fact of their life. I mean, that is awesome stuff to me. I mean, I've been conscious of the presence of God. I'm not conscious of it all the time. I'm going to get quiet with you guys in a little bit. Maybe somebody will get conscious of the presence of God. And if you do, raise your hand. But, I mean, that to me is like the ultimate. I mean, what more is there? So that's what this step 11 is all about. And, you know, I may not get that deep into it with the guy I'm working with, but I'll tell him, you know, we're not in this to get over. We're not in this to get over into a new way of life and, you know, become CEOs or, you know, our lives may blossom in ways that we never thought of. You know, we're not in this so that she comes back. We're in this so we don't die an alcoholic death. But guess what? We're also in it because we've had a new attitude and a new relationship with our Creator, which is what it says in Into Action, what this chapter is all about. So here we are, and we are on the verge of doing something that is intimately entwined with step 10, and that is trying to find God's will for us through prayer and meditation. And that's step 11. What it says in the book is that if we're headed for trouble if we let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. So in other words, we don't want to do that. Okay, that's pretty simple, and that's something I can tell the newcomer too. But it also says we have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. So let's get busy. Let's stay into action. What time is it, Pete? Okay, I got plenty of time. It says, every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. And for me, one day at a time, is that's where that comes from. Also, first things first. You know, there is a term that is used in the Bible a lot, and that's righteousness. Right, on the righteous man. Well, I try to fool everybody with my deal. You know, I try to convince you that I was a good guy. I was not a good guy. When I was out there drinking and when I was dry in his program, I was not a good guy. I'm a better guy now. Am I the righteous man? Well, righteousness means right thinking. When I can think, I was running today. I started to think about this and I started to get, and something spurred a thought about something that happened in my day, and I thought of a dishonest way to get somebody to agree with a point I was making during the day or something. And I laughed. But I thought of that dishonest way. I believe when I become a righteous man, I won't have a dishonest thought. I believe that that's what I got to strive for. I got to strive for the thoughts of confidence, quiet confidence. What would God have me do? If I strive for those thoughts, I'm going to become righteous. So there's another one day at a time, but there's another one called First Things First. And what it comes from is the biblical expression, or the biblical quote, where it's from, seek ye first the kingdom of God. And it's righteousness, right thinking. And all these things will be rendered unto you. So all the things that we're looking for in life and the things we don't even know that happen in our life happen to us as we get closer to God and right thinking. Okay? So what we do is, what we have is daily reprieve, and every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will be done, not mine be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line. All we wish, it is the proper use of the will. Okay, so we got our willpower back. We know what our will is supposed to be used for now. Much has been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of his Spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God-conscious. Okay, what we're talking about now is the amends process and working it during the day, working that 10-step during the day. We've begun to develop this vital means life-giving, sixth sense. But we must go further, and that means more action. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy in this matter of prayer, better than men than we are using it constantly. Okay, it says it works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. Okay, how do we get the proper attitude and how do we work at it? Well, they're going to tell us. And I can tell you, if I've gone through the steps with a guy and he's into the amends and he's really working it and he's communicating with me on his amends, there's no doubt in my mind that I think this man has no problem with the idea of prayer and or meditation, because he's been doing a kind of a quiet time since step four already. He's praying before he goes into his inventory, fourth step. He's praying before he goes into his fifth step. He's praying his seventh-step prayer, and he's praying before he goes into each amends. So this cat's praying. I mean, he's ready. He's going to do it. So he doesn't have any problem with that. Okay, then it tells us when we retire at night. This is the nightly inventory they talk about in the 10th step, in the 12 and 12. It says, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day, and then we answer the questions. Now, if anybody has a problem with that, I personally got to admit that I've had a lot of problems with doing that nightly review. So I'm going to pass these out. Pete, would you throw these around? These are just nightly review forms that just ask us the same questions that are in the big book. So if you'd like to have them or make copies and pass them out to a newcomer, that somebody you're working with, it makes it easier. Like when I come home and I go to bed and there's a thing on my nightstand and it says loose leaf. I got it in a loose leaf binder. You notice the holes in the sides where the copies, the imprints of the holes. I put it in a loose leaf binder and I go day to day. And my nightly review I do on the page, I answer the questions, which are right here. Where were we resentful? Where was I selfish? Where was I dishonest? Where was I afraid? Do I owe an apology? It takes me about 5 minutes to fill it out. If I'm really thorough, about 10. But what happens is I get a real good look at what I did and what I screwed up that day, and a guide for my behavior for the next day. In other words, I put down reflections on the day. You know, we try not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, because that would diminish my usefulness to others. But after making my review, I ask God for his forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. So there, I'm kind of answering, how am I going to behave tomorrow? And I put it down, and then I turn the page and write a few notes, and in the morning, that's my meditation page for the morning. The back of the nightly review. See, it's a blank sheet. Okay? And that's just something I give to these guys. They can use it or not. I mean, that's something that's personal. I expect them to do it, but, you know, only expect them to do it because they've seen some results from what they've done in the past. Following directions. So we go on through that, and then we go to Sleepy Bies, and in the morning, we wake up. It says, upon awakening, we think about the 24 hours ahead. So obviously this meditation is about what the hell I'm going to do that day. We get direction. We consider our plans for the day, but before we begin, we say a prayer here. And I call it the Direct Our Thinking Prayer. He said, ask God to direct our thinking. God, please direct my thinking today. Please keep it divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Now, I believe in the efficacy of prayer. Prayer works. Under these conditions, I can employ my mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave me a brain to use. My thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when my thinking is cleared of wrong motives. Well, if I believe in the power of prayer and I say that prayer, then when I sit down and ask for direction for my day, it should come. Okay? And then it says, in thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought or decision. We relax or take it easy. I make that part of my prayer too. God, help me relax and take it easy. Give me an intuitive thought or a decision about these things that I face in my day. And I write it out, and I give it to the new guy. Actually, I got it typed out, so I can just make a copy and give it to the new guy. Okay? That's a prayer, and then I relax and take it easy. Then I start to get into meditation. Now, whatever my meditative practice is, so I'm going to talk for a couple of minutes on meditative practices, and then I'm going to suggest that we get quiet and do a meditation, and then we'll open it up for discussion after that meditation. And since I'm leading this, you have no choice. Anyway, I'm going to ask if that's okay with you guys, but it doesn't really matter, huh? Step 11 in the 12 and 12. Prayer and meditation are our principal means of conscious contact with God. Okay, he's broadening and deepening my understanding as a person who's worked through the steps and had a spiritual experience. This is meant to broaden and deepen my understanding. I don't give it to newcomers until they've been through the steps. I just don't. And I tell them to put it away. You know, it tells me in working with others to tell them to read the book, this book, the big book. And then I can give him much practical advice if he wants to go through with the program of action. But I don't tell him to read this. I wait until he's had a spiritual experience. He's working with somebody else. I say, hey, you know, you got the guy into amends, review 10 and 11 in the big book and the 12 and 12, and then help the guy out with getting his deal done. This is somebody that I'm sponsoring, I know is working with others, which is something I try to move my guys into when they're finishing their amends. Start looking for newcomers you can take through the work. Do it just like we did it. You know, and I don't, and this is another thing, I do not embellish this stuff. I try not to anyway. I try to stick to the directions because it's worked for thousands of guys. And if it's Vinny's program, I'm going to screw somebody's life up. You know, I make it Alcoholics Anonymous program. And it says on 98, there is a direct linkage among self-examination, meditation, and prayer. Taken separately, these practices can bring much relief and benefit. But when they are logically related and interwoven, the result is an unshakable foundation for life. Wow, man. I like that, unshakable. That and conscious contact is just about like, you know, that's just the, that's peaches and cream, you know. When they are logically and related and interwoven, the result is an unshakable foundation for life. So now I've got an unshakable foundation for life, which wasn't my reality when I was drinking, which wasn't my reality before I was able to do this work and have a spiritual experience. I did not have an unshakable. I had a pretty creaky, kind of like one of those things you see in a Carol, those houses on stilts right next to the ocean, you know. That's about what my foundation was like back then. Now I've got an unshakable foundation for life, and I've got a conscious contact with the Creator. You know, and that's beautiful. That's the stuff. That's what I want. Now and then, we may be granted a glimpse of the ultimate reality, which is God's kingdom. You know, thy kingdom come, seek ye first the kingdom of God. God's kingdom to me today, for me today, is that conscious contact, that quiet confidence, that realization that I'm living in the fellowship of the Spirit. I walk into these rooms, and I'm part of the spirit of the fellowship. I get a little charge out of that spirit of the fellowship, and it may last for a little while. But my ass is dragging. Nothing is better than an unshakable foundation for life. That's what I need in this fellowship and this program. So, anyway. And we will be comforted and assured that our own destiny in that realm, God's kingdom, will be secure for so long as we try, however falteringly, to find and do the will of our Creator. So what Bill's telling us here is that it may be faltering. You know, our desire to find God's will, our desire to meditate. So we got meditative practices. And I was down at the shore with my little girl. We spent a week together in La Valette. And I noticed this little sign, and it said, Tai Chi, 8 o'clock, Tai Chi Chuan, at 8 o'clock in the morning on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I said, man, I'm going to try that, man. I never tried that. And right before I left, I saw a 7 o'clock meditation. Now, I didn't make the 7 o'clock meditation. I did my own at home. And then I went to the Tai Chi. And I got a lot of energy out of that Tai Chi. This woman was really spiritually centered, and she was talking about using the power. And I was feeling some energy. I was really feeling some energy. So I decided to go to her meditation. And she took me through a guided meditation. I happened to be the only person that showed up. She had like 6 or 8 chairs right on the bay in La Valette. It was beautiful. I mean, absolutely beautiful. And she starts to talk me through a meditation. And what she did was start with the feet. And what she would say was, center on your feet and accept the joy and the healing that is available to you. Don't forget your feet. And then she'd say, now we move to the ankles. We accept the joy and the healing. And she went slowly up my body, up to my face, up to the top of my head. And by the time she got to the top of my head, the top of my head was about to blow off. It was like, I was feeling so much energy, it was unbelievable. The whole bottom of my body felt like there was an electric blanket over it. And this, mind you, this was the first time I did this guided meditation with this woman. So, you know, that was a totally new experience for me. Usually I'm up on my bed on a couple of pillows, which some of my friends tell me I shouldn't meditate on my bed. It's like, hey, you know. I heard Joe Hawk speak. He says, there's a bunch of P's and one is place. Whatever you're comfortable, get comfortable in a place that you're comfortable. Position. Some people like feet firmly on the floor. I like that because I started to feel the energy come right up into my feet because I concentrated on them. And I believe in God's presence and the energy. I am concentrating essentially on God's presence here. Okay? Then he says posture. Straight up and down from the top of your head right down to your hips. Okay? Point. What point do you believe God, because we find the great reality deep down within us. We all know that. It's right out of the book. So if God's reality is deep in within us, where is it? Where do we envision that? Where do we envision that reality? For me, it's right behind my solar plexus, right at the juncture of my lungs. That's where I feel God's presence. That's where I feel the power emanate from. So I concentrate on that. Play it. A point. Point. And then I just let the power in. And I kind of concentrate. And I get quiet. And when I get quiet, I realize that God is everywhere. Now, In the early days of AA, there was a group. Everybody, a lot of people here know this, of course. But Bob and Bill and the first bunch of drunks got sober in the Oxford group. The Oxford group had a bunch of tenets that they followed, much like our steps. You know, we had William Silkworth gave us first step, Carl Jung gave us our second step, and then the Oxford group was responsible for the rest of the steps. Okay, they had meditation and guidance as part of their deal. And this, and I'm going to ask Pete to pass these around. Some of you may have them, some of you may not. But this is how they practice guidance and meditation. And it has some pretty beautiful things in here. It tells you before you begin, you have to look at some fundamental points. And then it says God is alive, God knows everything, God can do anything. And it brings you down to a point where you're listening to God. And then you start to write about what you get. So I try to practice this, and I find that I get thoughts about my day, because it says here, in thinking about our day. So what they're doing is giving us a brief synopsis of what the Oxford group was doing at that time. When Bob, if you read Bach to Bob in the Good Old Timers, it's a great book, Bob Smith's wife would ask these new drunks as they came into her kitchen every day. A lot of them didn't have jobs, you know. They were just sober. They just worked the steps with Dr. Bob. He was a step machine. So these cats were done. They'd done amends, but they didn't even have their jobs back yet, and they were still pretty shaky. They'd walk in. She'd give them coffee. She'd sit them all down around a kitchen table, and she said, "What did you get out of your morning meditation? What guidance did you get out of your morning meditation?" It was a life-important question to each of these men. It was the most important question, because what kind of guidance were they going to get for their day? How are they going to stay in contact with God? How are they going to do God's will? She would ask them that. She was a real Oxford grouper. She was really in tune with it. And that was the beginning of the first open discussion meeting. And the topic was always, what did you get out of your morning meditation? So these guys were practicing this Oxford group method. And if anybody wants another copy, feel free. So what we have is, it says here, If circumstance, now it says what we do is we ask God for inspiration. We're thinking about our day. We're often surprised the right answers will come. Now, they used to write them down. The right answers would come. They'd write them down. It says to write down every thought. Okay, what used to be the hunch, the occasional inspiration, gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it's not probable we're going to be inspired at all times. You know, what difference does it make? The practice is, the proof is in the practice, okay? Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. Now, that's a promise. It will materialize if we work for them, like I said before, okay? We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. That is a prayer. That's a prayer. That's how I conclude my meditation. Okay? So these are the things that I tell a newcomer to do once they're into amends, to stay on the right track, to get with 10, get with 11, and don't leave any stone unturned when it comes to spiritual meditative practices, because people have had great success with it, and they're not just AAers. This is a great little format, this thing, but, you know, if you want to get into the lotus position, if you want to practice the breathing, Hawk was talking about breathing a prayer. God, direct my thinking. Please, God, keep my thinking free of self-will. Breathing a prayer. Thinking that at the beginning of your meditative practice. It's really, really settling. It's a wonderful way to start. Okay? Now, I want to take about 5 minutes. If everybody's amenable to this, I'm going to do some quiet time. I want to take us through the prayer of St. Francis towards the end of that quiet time, and I'm going to read something out of the 12 and 12. What I'd like to do is to get quiet for 5 minutes, real quiet. What I'd like us all to do is concentrate on God's presence in the room. Okay, God is alive. He's all around us. He's in us. Try to practice the place where God is. Do the breathing, whatever breathing is comfortable for you. And then I'm going to read some suggestive stuff right out of the 10th, suggestive of meditation out of the 12 and 12. And then I'll read the prayer of St. Francis. And perhaps we can get some inspiration from that we can carry into our discussion when I close the meditation down. Okay. So let's all get comfortable in a nice posture, a nice position. Nice, easy breathing. I'm going to be quiet for 5 minutes, and I'll do some reading. Stay in meditation through the reading, and then we'll open up for discussion. We're just going to concentrate on God's presence. We have seen self-searching is the means by which we bring new vision, action, and grace to bear upon the negative, dark side of our natures. It is a step in the development of that kind of humility that makes it possible for us to receive God's help. Yet it is only a step. We will want to go further. We will want the good that is in us all to flower and grow. Most certainly, we shall need bracing air and an abundance of food. But first of all, we shall want sunlight. Nothing much can grow in the dark. Meditation is our step out into the sun. As though lying on a sunlit beach, let us relax and breathe deeply of the spiritual atmosphere with which the grace of this prayer surrounds us. Let us become willing to partake and be strengthened and lifted up by the sheer spiritual power, beauty, and love of which these magnificent words are the carriers. Let us now look upon the sea and ponder what its mystery is. Let us lift our eyes to the far horizon, beyond which we shall seek all those wonders still unseen. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds. It is by forgiving that one is forgiven. It is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen. Thanks, everybody. Thank you very much. What I do when I discuss this step with a newcomer, I point out that the big book says, first we meditate, then we pray, and then we read some inspirational meditation books or guidance things. I used to do it the other way around, but I find that the essential is to get my guidance from God, thank God for the guidance, and then read some stuff that someone who is maybe more spiritually centered than I has written down, and maybe get a little more inspiration and direction from someone who has had more power in their life than I did. It's a way of getting in touch with God and also reminding myself that there's a lot of room to grow during the day. And when worst comes to worst, when all else fails, I can at least concentrate on what I read that day. And last but not least, there's an 11-step meeting in Somerville, Saturday morning quiet time. It's at 8:45, and it meets in Immaculate Conception Church. And what it is 20 minutes of prayer, meditation, then prayer, and then 30 minutes of discussion. And you're all welcome to come, or try to start one in your own area, wherever that may be. And the results are gratifying. I felt a lot of power in the room tonight. So you feel a lot more. And it does discuss in here that you may want to meditate with your loved ones. I done the nightly review with a significant other once, and it was pretty powerful. It wasn't like we didn't want to do it again. Just we weren't significant others much longer after that. But it worked. It was great. Because there's no BS in another alcoholic, and of course there's no BS in God. and just it was a, and of course meditating with others, as we can all see tonight, is pretty powerful practice. So thanks for letting me share. We got about 10-12 minutes for discussion. We'll open up the meeting.